Hi, my name is Kimberly Long, and I spent 7 years and 3 months in prison for a crime I did not commit.
Hi, this is DeMarco. I'm here with Brooke, and you're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast bringing awareness to wrongful convictions and problems with the justice system. How are you doing this week, Brooke?
I am doing amazing. I just got back from vacation. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Where'd you go?
I went to Disney World. I know that I'm an adult, but Disney World is still my favorite place in the entire world.
Wow. I've never been there, but I do want to go one day.
I would love for you to go too. It's amazing because, I mean, I love the rides and I love the characters and I love the music, but what I really love about Disney World is that everyone is nice. I love an environment of nice people. What did you do this week? Are you moved yet?
Yes, I'm actually moved. So what I've been doing is sitting here reminiscing, daydreaming, whatever you want to call it, because just 16 months ago, I was in prison with a life in 170 years, fantasizing, daydreaming, thinking that one day, hoping one day I'll be out, I'll be free. And all the things that I fantasized and dreamed about, now I'm here, I'm doing those things, and life is on a good, I'm on a good path right now, you know. And the thing about all this is, like I said, that when I get out, I want to be, you know, I want to go to a Thunder game. You know, I've been to a Thunder game. I got to meet Russell Westbrook. I took pictures with him, and I was up close and personal talking to him and all the Oklahoma City Thunder players, and that was a good feeling. And I met B. Legit, who's a rapper who I grew up listening to. That was a wonderful experience. And, you know, I'm meeting a lot of great people, and I've met a lot of great people, and people, opportunities have been coming my way, and I'm taking advantage of them, and, you know, I've been enjoying myself.
I have some trivia questions, but I think first we need to thank today's sponsors for supporting our show and thank the listeners for supporting our sponsors.
No, we need the sponsors. Without the sponsors, there's no show. And without the show, you know, we can't bring awareness. So definitely we need our sponsors.
I know it's not fair to play favorites, but Bombas socks are my absolute favorite. I wear them pretty much every day because they're that comfortable. But they also have a special meaning to me and my family. The holiday season's getting close, and that means time with family and friends and inevitably presents. Believe it or not, my little brother has asked for socks this year for Christmas. Socks aren't the typical item on his list, but Bombas socks have changed his life. My brother has autism, and for the first 20 years of his life, socks in general were hard. Now though, with his Bombas socks, that really are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet, because they don't have a toe seam, they don't get twisted, and thanks to Bombas, my brother's life has drastically improved. I love my own Bombas socks too, and I love that every pair I buy, someone else gets a pair too. They're comfortable and stylish, and they keep my feet warm in the winter. Actually, DeMarco, you just got your very first pair of Bombas socks too. What do you think? Do you like them as much as me?
No, I'm not even joking. I really love my Bombas socks. They're comfortable, the colors, the arc, everything about my Bombas sock I love. And when I text you in Vegas and I said, Brooke, I love my Bombas socks, out of the blue.
Yes,
yeah,
I remember.
I'm serious. Yes, I love my Bombas sock.
It makes me feel so good that this holiday, I can not only get my loved ones comfortable, quality socks, but someone in need is also getting that same gift. Bombas, the company, has my total respect. And you can buy your Bombas socks at bombas.com/actual today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's Bombas, bombas.com/actual for 20% off. bombas.com/actual. Because our interview today is with Kimberly Long, our trivia questions are about the California Innocence Project. First question. The California Innocence Project, according to their website, pays the investigation and litigation costs for how many cases per year? A, over 500, B, over 1,000, C, over 1,500, or D, over 2,000? The answer is C, over 1,500 cases. And I actually double-checked that several times because it felt like so many, 1,500. Second question. What is the quote-unquote logo of the California Innocence Project? Is it a picture of broken bars on a cell, B, a license plate that says exonerate, or C, the Actual Innocence podcast logo?
That was the easy one. I was in San Diego and I got a shirt and a hat. So B.
Good job. Ding, 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 ding. I also got a shirt. So you were the one, once again, who was able to get Kimberly to interview with us. Can you tell me and the listeners how you became familiar with Kimberly's case?
Did you know I actually met Kimberly in San Diego last year and we became friends and we were Facebook friends, but I have pictures of us and I'm excited to have her. Here she is, Kimberly Long.
I grew up in Orange County. I grew up in Buena Park, born and raised there till I was 14 years old. I went to school out there. My mom and dad have been married for over 40 years. We used to go on vacations all the time. I have a brother that's 7 years older than me. I pretty much had just a normal childhood. Well, what we call normal, you know, just like everybody else.
Did you want to go to college? What was your plan?
Since I was a little girl, I always knew that I wanted to become a nurse. So as the years went on, that was one of the things that I always strived to do. And I ended up becoming a nurse.
Can you tell us what your life was like in 2003 before anything bad happened?
In 2003, I was 27 years old. I had two beautiful children. And I was married but just separated and starting to go through a divorce. I was a nurse. I worked at the same hospital at that point for about 7 or 8 years. And I was actually just kind of living life. You know, there was a big transition going on in my life, but I had accomplished almost everything that I had set out to do. My life was pretty good in 2003.
What kind of nurse were you?
I was an LVN, and I worked in the emergency room. So they put me in the back with pretty much the non-critical patients. But the ones, you know, that would just come in through the ER, more of like an urgent care.
Your life changed pretty drastically in another way in 2003. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. In 2003, I had met my first love again. I've known Ozzy. We call him Ozzy. His name is Oswaldo. I knew him since I was 12 years old when we lived in Orange County. And while I was separated and going through a divorce, I met Ozzy again in Orange County, and we immediately fell in love, and we immediately moved in together and started our life really fast. And also, it was that same year that I came home and found him murdered on my couch.
Wow.
You know, I did end up calling 911. I panicked. I didn't know what to do. Even as a nurse, I had no clue what was happening in my home. You know, I didn't expect to come home and see what I saw. And I did call 911, and, you know, the police eventually showed up and, you know, took over. It was just one of the worst days of my life.
Eventually, it took a long time?
It seemed like forever. It seemed like forever. I ended up calling him twice. And honestly, I think it maybe took him, I don't even remember anymore, but it seemed like it was an eternity for them to show up.
Do that still affect you today, seeing what you saw?
Yes. I actually, I got diagnosed with PTSD because of what I saw. And I still have, I had a lot of flashbacks after it happened for many years. Today, it's not as bad, but there's certain things that will still trigger it. But it doesn't affect me as hard as what it did in the beginning.
You've learned to cope some?
I realize when I'm driving on the road that the big oil stain is an oil stain and not a blood spot. And I think that's what really got me for many years is seeing that. And so I just remind myself it's oil, it's not blood.
How did the police consider you as a suspect?
You know, I'm not quite sure what happened with that police department. I cooperated fully. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to, honestly. The one regret I have, not that you asked that, but is speaking to the police. And if I were to do it over again today, I would have never said a word to them. I thought I was supposed to help them and talk to them. I went down and took a polygraph test. I passed my polygraph test. And there was another woman, Ozzy's ex-girlfriend, who took a polygraph test and she failed it. And this is the same woman who we were trying to get restraining orders against. So why they picked me to this day, I have no idea. I just don't know.
Where were you at? I'm curious to know, where were you at when you were first confronted by the police?
Well, when I came home that night, I found him. And then within 3 days, I was in an interrogation office. And that's when they had decided that I was going to be the suspect. And this is after I took a polygraph test within 24 hours. It was like maybe 12 hours. It was like pretty much right then I pretty much took a polygraph test. So I was in an interrogation room. He died October 6th. On the 9th, I was there. And they were beginning to blame me and tell me that I did it. I spent 3.5 hours in a room with these two huge police officers screaming and yelling at me. And I don't know why. I don't. To this day, I have no clue why they even suspected me.
Were you released?
I was released. They didn't arrest me. They arrested me a month later on November 11th. So he died October 6th, interrogation on the 9th, and I was arrested November 11th for second-degree murder.
I feel angry on your behalf. Like, I used to work as a therapist before I did this whole podcasting thing, and the fact that they were, like, assaulting you verbally before you even had a chance to grieve makes me so angry.
Yeah, it was horrible. They had told me not to go to his funeral because he was buried on the 13th. And they said, don't go to his funeral. We'll be watching you. And it was like the most awkward thing ever to go to this funeral. Like, it was so awkward. I just didn't understand. I never had a chance to grieve over anything because I fought for my life, you know, right after he had died. After he was murdered, for 15 years now, I've been fighting for my life.
Who told you not to go to the funeral?
The police, the detectives.
Wow.
Yeah, they told me not to go.
Did you get to say goodbye to him? Did you get to see him?
I did. I actually regret that.
Yeah.
I regret that. I didn't want to see him. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have went to see him like that. There's no way. Huge regret.
And when they came a month later, November 11th, right?
Yes.
And what did they charge you with?
First of all, they called me and said, we have a lineup and we want to show you the pictures. And I said, well, let me take my son to school first. He's in kindergarten. And they said, it'll only take a second. Just meet us down by McDonald's. So I went down there with my son, and when he told me to get out of the car he had a book in his hand so I could see the photographs, another cop car pulled up and they grabbed me and they arrested me in front of my son. And my son was screaming in the car. And to this day, he's had repercussions because of that.
That's terrible.
He was what, 5 or 6? Oh my gosh.
He was 5 years old. So they charged me. They took me and they charged me with second degree murder.
Where did your son go?
They called his dad. They said, let's call Joe, tell him to come pick him up. And the other detective started rubbing his face like he always did and said, why are we going to call him when he's the one that probably did it?
Oh, wow.
So I was very confused at that point as well. They were blaming my ex-husband, but there was also the ex-girlfriend that was involved.
But they're arresting you.
They're arresting me. They just refuse to look outside the box. You know, one of my attorneys had always said, you know, if you find your loved one dead, you're halfway into a conviction. And I believe that 100%.
Did you ask for an attorney right then, or?
I've never been in trouble before. Like, I had a DUI when I was 19. I had absolutely no clue what I was doing. At that point, it dawned on me to shut up. It actually dawned on me to shut up. So when the DA was in there and they said that they're charging me with second degree murder, and so it's time to come clean and say what I did, I put my head on the table and I said, I just signed those Miranda rights and it says I have the right to be quiet. And I put my head down on the table and I never said another word to them.
So after that, you were arrested, booked. And how long did you stay in the county jail?
Actually, I stayed in that little cell for 12, 12 hours, and then they put me in the jail. And I was there for 5 days before I bailed out. So my family bailed me out. They could either put money down on an attorney who's going to use up all that money, and I'm going to end up with a public defender anyways because there is no more money, or they can get their daughter out of jail because she's innocent. So they decided to bail me out, and we got a public defender.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask, you said you had another child also, right? You had two children?
I have two children.
And so how old was your other child?
They were 5 and 10.
Did your 10-year-old also go with their father?
Yeah, where was she? I think she was already in school that day because my son went in the afternoon and she went in the morning, so she was already gone. Actually, she was in school.
So why they bailed you out and then you had a public defender, so you were out while he looked for evidence to fight for you?
He didn't look for any evidence, but I was out the whole time. I was out. I had to turn myself in because my bail ran out. Bail lasts for 1 year. So in 2005, I had to turn myself in knowing I was going to be going to trial. I went to trial January, February 2005. It was a hung jury, 9 in my favor. The judge lowered my bail and let me out. And they decided to retry me. I was tried again that same year, same judge, same public defender, same DA, and I was found guilty December 27th, 2005. In 2006, February, I was sentenced to 15 to life, and the judge said, if this were a trial by court, I would have found you not guilty, and I'm going to let you go on bail pending your appeal. So I was sentenced to life, but I was let go because the judge believed in me.
Mm.
And so I went home.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. So I went home. And honestly, my life from 2003 until 2009 has been horrible. Even though I was out on bail for those years, it was the worst years of my life. Because the moment I thought I was happy, I was reminded that I could go to prison. There was like never any true happiness or freedom those years after I was sentenced. It was really hard to live those years.
I can't imagine not knowing.
There was no happiness. There was none.
I am so sorry.
So he let you go home. When were you finally sent to prison?
I lost my appeal in 2009. And I lost in the Supreme Court, and I had to turn myself in to a life sentence. I had to get my mind right. I had to get my mind right before I did it. But I did ultimately turn myself in 2009. March 23rd, 2009, I went to prison.
That first day you turned yourself in, you went to prison?
I went to jail for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
So April 8th, 2009. I went to prison. I went straight up to Chowchilla, and I stayed there for 4.5 years until they shipped me down to another prison for 3.
DeMarco, I love, 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 love pop cards. They're these intricate 3D laser-cut paper cards, and they're absolutely beautiful. They're handcrafted and assembled using an Asian art form similar to origami. I just spent the last week writing Christmas cards to pretty much everyone I know. And I know that the card is going to be as good as the present because the Love Pop cards are so beautiful.
I love Love Pop cards. And Brooke, thank you for mine. When I opened my card and I just seen it, it just jumped out.
Literally, right?
Yes, literally. I opened it and a tree popped up and also a couple.
I'm glad you loved your card, and I actually just had to order another holiday pack because I want all the people I love to have the same amazing feeling that you did when they open up their cards.
I've actually sent my mom some Love Pop cards as well.
And as a listener of our show, you're able to unlock a very special deal. Visit lovepop.com/actual, and you can unlock special pricing for 5 or more cards and get free shipping on any order by visiting lovepop.com/actual. One more time, that's lovepop.com/actual. I also want to put a challenge out there for you. I'll send a Love Pop Christmas card to the first person who can guess my favorite card on the Love Pop site. Just send your guess to the email in the show notes.
I bet that first day you turned yourself in, that first night, I bet it was hard.
Man. It was actually, honestly, it felt like a release.
For a while.
It actually felt like a release. It was like, okay, good, fine. Now what? Now I got to figure out how to get out. But it was like the inevitable, you know, like this dark cloud finally hanging over me, like it finally just burst. It's probably hard to explain. Maybe people couldn't understand it because you haven't been through it. But to have that weight hanging over you, you just wanted something to freaking happen. Just do it or don't. And it finally did it.
So after you turned yourself in, did you ever think that you would be getting, you would get out or get released or see the light of day again? You did?
I did. From the moment I turned myself in, I knew I was going to be able to get back out. I knew I was coming back out. I didn't know when, but I knew it was going to happen. I didn't know how, but I knew that day was going to come. And I had some bad days, don't get me wrong. I had a couple moments of doubt, but, you know, I started questioning life, but I knew it was going to happen.
What was prison like for you?
You know, I don't know anything about, how do I say it? I learned a lot of life's lessons in prison. I feel like I kind of grew up in prison. I was 33 years old when I went there. And there were some really hard times. There were some lonely times. There was times where, like I said, I've questioned many things, but there was a lot of things that I learned in prison that were for the good. Women's prisons are different from men's prisons. You know, we don't have the segregation or the racism or anything like that. The violence is there, but we're all mothers and we're all trying to nurture each other.
Listen, right. Hold on. No segregation, no racism.
In a women's prison? Not the way you guys have it.
We have it hard too.
Yeah, the men are completely different from the women. My best friend is she's black. And she's the one that had my back most of all. You know, she had me before any white person did. You know, and she was my people. I absolutely love her. You know, so there was absolutely no segregation in there. Not where I was at.
Did
and there's only two women's prison, and I hit them both. So there was no segregation.
Did you meet anyone else who you thought might have been wrongly convicted?
I was with five of the women that were represented from the California Innocence Project.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I was imprisoned with all of them. So I knew them. Other than that, the women that I met in prison, the women were pretty forthcoming. You know, if they did it, they did it. You know, they copped to it. I didn't really meet too many people that didn't say they did it.
Yeah.
You know,
so there was
a handful of women that I met that I believed were innocent.
Have you ever met anyone that's out now that was exonerated?
No women. I've met men. I have so many guy friends, but I haven't met another woman. Well, at the Innocence Conference, I did, but nobody keeps in touch.
Yeah.
Not one person. But the guys, like, we text all the time. Like, those are my buddies. Like, Timothy Atkins, Glenn Boyd, Rowling, Mr. Michael Handline, Bill Richards, Alan Jimenez. Like, those are my people.
It's strange because I'm the type of person that meet people. We change numbers. I might text you and, you know, keep in touch because I want to know how you're doing. I'm going to tell you how I'm doing. But you're right. No one likes to keep in touch.
Yeah. And I love it. Like, if you text me, like, I'm totally on top of it. Like, I text people, like, right in the morning time. I have a certain amount of people, and I just, like, send hearts, say, hey, what's up? You know, just, like, my good friends. And, you know, I always do that. I'm real big on that, you know?
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be something deep. It could just be like, hey, you know, hope you have a great day.
Yeah, that's all. That is it. And it's really hard for, like I said, it hasn't happened with any women exonerees.
When you were in prison, did you have any loved ones supporting you and helping you out?
Yes. Yes. My mom and dad were my biggest fans, man. They got together with the California Innocence Project, and they marched with them, rallied with them, walked with them. My Aunt Jan, Uncle Jeff, my cousin Patrick, Bobby, Thomas, everybody got together and did all these rallies, walked for wrongful convictions. I've had a lot of good friends, Jenna and Joanna, step forward and, you know, do shows and just, like, talk on my behalf. And I'm just so grateful for these people that stood by me for those 7 years and 3 months. And there was a lot of people who didn't, you know. But the ones that did, I'm just very loyal to my family today for sticking by me and never giving up and keeping the faith and picking me up when I was down.
Amen.
You know, there were some phone calls, you know. I kept losing in court when I was in prison. I mean, I just forever lost. And they were there to always pick me up, and I'm just so grateful for that. My gratitude is huge.
Did you get to see your children?
After about 3 years, I didn't see my kids for 3 years. Can you believe that? As a mother, as a mom, I did not physically see my children.
Because your ex-husband?
Yeah, because he was a suspect. My daughter wasn't 18 yet. I mean, it was just a process. But it was, you know, for a mom to even go a weekend without seeing their child, you know? I just dropped my son off at this train station to go back to his school in L.A., and I was holding him then. I was holding him right now, and he's 19 years old. Mm. Yeah, those are my children. I mean, I'm a mother. I'm a mom, and they took that from me, you know? But Let me tell you, you know, you can't break a bond between a mother and her children. That bond is never broken. They couldn't break that. They might have tried to take it away for a little bit, but we were right there. It could not break it.
I'm curious to know, what were some of your stress relievers? What made you stay strong or kept you strong, kept you focused and motivate you to one day believe you'll be home?
You know, I stayed really busy in prison. I lived in the honor dorm. I facilitated a lot of groups. I was very active in recovery. I sponsored a lot of girls in recovery. I exercised.
Can you tell me what the honor dorm is?
The honor dorm is for people who don't have any write-ups. I never had one write-up in the 7 years and 3 months I was in prison, which is, you know, no 115s or 128s. And so you're allowed to go into this honor dorm, and you just kind of live a little bit easier. You know, people there are a little bit like-minded. We're all just trying to get out of prison.
Right.
So I got to stay in there for the 4.5 years I was in Chowchilla.
You can relax a little.
Yeah, a little bit. So it was, that's how I stayed busy, and that's how I kept my mind focused.
And I really do. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It makes it so easy to buy tickets. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just use SeatGeek to buy tickets to, you guessed it, another Thunder game.
I have to admit that after getting familiar with the SeatGeek app, like you told me, I do absolutely love it. It's not just about sports. They have all kinds of shows and productions available. Plus, it saves me time and money because it compares all the sites for me.
I love that it gives each seat a grade, so I always know that I'm able to find the best seats in my price range. Plus, the tickets are guaranteed, so I can be confident with my purchase.
SeatGeek has definitely become the go-to app for me for finding the best deals on every type of ticket you can imagine. I'm so glad I checked it out. I hope you get the SeatGeek app too and see how easy and amazing it is to use.
Best of all, our listeners get $20 off the first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code ACTUAL today. That's promo code ACTUAL ACTUAL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Did you get any certificates, diploma? Was there anything offered to you? Any type of education?
Not in Chowchilla. Chowchilla was really hard to get into. Not until I was transferred down to CIW in Corona, mm-hmm. where things were a little bit even more relaxed, and I was able to start attending college. I did get my paralegal certificate. I did start going to college while I was in there. I also became a firefighter trainer.
Oh, wow.
So we would, yeah, me and the other girls would train the firefighters, inmate firefighters, to get out there and fight these fires that have come about in the recent months here. So there was some things that were offered.
And you were an educated woman. I mean, you had a nursing degree. Did you have any opportunity to practice that or use that while you were there?
You mean the girls would get beat up and come knock on my cell door?
In any official capacity?
No, not at all. No, but I stayed healthy in there. No, it was good. But yeah, could I use that? No.
That's so interesting because I've heard that medical professionals in prison are sometimes hard to come by. I would think that you being a person who obviously was honorable, they would allow you to use your skills that way.
No, I'm more of a lot. I'm an inmate.
Yeah, I know. That's
I'm X36387 inmate long. I have no rights, no privileges, no anything.
So you said your parents met with like the California Innocence Project. How did that all happen? How did that connection?
Actually, after my boyfriend was murdered, I think it was that next year in 2004, me and my mom came across the California Innocence Project, whether it's on the computer or the newspaper, back when they had a newspaper back then.
They're everywhere, aren't they?
The California Innocence Project?
Yeah.
Or newspapers. So I think newspapers were like obsolete almost or something. It's very strange. I got out, newspapers are gone, and everybody's vaping. I'm all, what the hell is going on? Yeah, they are. I think, yeah, the CIP was everywhere at the time. But my mom said, maybe you should contact them. So I started to write them and let them know about my situation. But they couldn't do anything for me until I was incarcerated and I exhausted all my appeals. So once I got into prison, I called to remind them I was in prison now. And, you know, hey, I'm here, you know. Does anybody know I'm here? Seriously, and that's what I said. I'm like, dude, I'm in prison. Like, do something. Something happened. And so they ended up taking my case, I think, just in 2010, right about 2010.
We're talking to you now. What was the process like for you to be freed?
You know, what happened? I lost so many times. It finally, a habeas writ, I think it was, finally ended up in the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court justices, all seven of them, signed off. And they brought it back down to the lower court and said, something happened. You know, you need to fix this. My judge ended up coming out of retirement to hear my case.
Wow.
Came out of retirement to hear my case, my evidentiary hearing. I actually got a court date. And that's what I waited for those 7 years, was to get a date. That's all I needed. I needed a freaking court date. And I finally got it. And they ended up transferring me out of that prison in a van to the county jail. And that I was shell-shocked at that point. And that was a whole different transition from being a state inmate to going back to a county jail where there's like civilians and no prison mentality. It really, really messed with me for a minute. I got back in there and we had an evidentiary hearing for 5 days. And I took the stand again. It's my third time taking the stand. And I said it all. I didn't hold back. It was my time. It was all or nothing. And I wasn't going to shut up this time. I had nothing to lose. And so I said anything I needed to say in that given moment. And the judge ended up overturning my case on ineffective of counsel. And once again, let me go on bail. So June 10th, 2016, I was released. And once again, the DA appealed it.
Wow.
So here I am again. But I have no conviction. I registered to vote right away because, you know, Trump was trying to be president. I won't make this political. That's all I'll say. But I registered to vote right away, and I just wanted to get all my rights back. You know, my conviction is overturned, and it had been many years since I was not convicted. And for some reason, I felt like a completely different person.
So let me make sure I understand. So you were exonerated, like your conviction was overturned.
Overturned.
And you're a free person, but there's an appeal out there that could potentially take your freedom.
Yes.
I am so sorry.
Yeah.
No, that's the hardest thing. Yeah, that's hard too. I just went through that. I went through that, and that was so hard, and I was so scared. And, you know, I'm not going to even lie. I thought about running. Hey, should I run if they come back with a guilty verdict and tell me I have to go back to prison after doing 22? I didn't know what I was going to do, but I know it was hard. But I stayed strong, and I prayed, and, you know, everything worked out. So hopefully everything will work out for you, and I'll keep you in my prayers.
It's going to, and I appreciate that so much. Appreciate that. Yeah, October 6th will be 15 years.
Yeah. So what are you doing now?
Man, what am I not doing? Seriously, like, what am I not doing? My life is so filled with just so much. You know, I made a list when I was in prison, just so you know. I made this huge list of when I was in prison of everything I was going to do when I got out. And let me tell you, I have knocked off so much of that stuff.
Bucket
yeah,
list.
Lists are great, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, lists are amazing.
Yeah.
I'm a huge hiker. So I do these crazy hikes, like 22, 25 miles. I was just looking at another hike to do.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I work 3 jobs right now. I started going to school right away. So I'm back in college.
For what?
I do a paralegal internship with one lady. I work at my friend's restaurant like every other Saturday. I work at a detox drug rehab right here in Corona. I also have a patient on the side that I work with. I'm still in recovery. I still have sponsees. I mean, I have a boyfriend. I ride a motorcycle.
That's amazing.
I have kids. My life is great.
You do a lot.
I know.
Yeah, you do a lot. Hey, you know, you know what I want to talk about?
Tell me.
I want to talk about San Diego.
Tell me about San Diego.
San Diego, I had so much fun. That was the first time I had ever left the state of Oklahoma.
Oh, no way. And you went to San Diego?
Yes.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yes.
What did you do in San Diego?
The Innocence
Conference. I know, but there's like so much to do. But yeah.
Oh, it is. I did a lot, too. I walked around. I lift. I did everything I possibly could. Went to the mall. It was fantastic. It was exciting.
Yeah. Most definitely. I really wish you guys were going to the gala on the, you know, the Innocence Conference is having the big gala on the 5th.
Of this month?
Yes, on Thursday.
That's in California?
Yeah.
But listen, I don't know if you know, but my face was just used on something for the California Innocence Project.
I know. And, I'm going to have to look it up and see if I can see what was going on.
I'm going to tag you in it, but I want to know. Yes.
Do you plan to go to the Innocence Conference next year?
That's in Tennessee?
Yeah.
Memphis, Tennessee,
Actually, I've almost like never been outside of the state of California, so I definitely want to go.
Yeah. We're going to be there, so you can hang out with us for sure.
You want to go or are you going?
I want to go, and actually, I will know in October 23rd, if I am able to go. So I'll definitely keep you posted.
So, can you tell us about that the day that you were released? Like, what did it feel like to be like?
You know, oh man, that's so crazy. day I was released. You know, it's kind of funny. They kept me away from all the other prisoners all of a sudden, all the other inmates. It was the weirdest thing.
They didn't want them to catch it?
I know, right? It was contagious. I guess because there was so much media outside, they kept me there till 9 o'clock at night. And they had brought me in clothes to wear. And I hadn't put on, like, you know, heels or a pair of jeans or a tight-fitting shirt in so many years. It was awkward for me.
Right.
And I hadn't slept in like a week, you know. And I got out, and as soon as I walked out, like, nobody said anything. Everybody just stared at me, you know, and I didn't know what to do. So I just started yelling, you know. I was like, oh, my God, I made it. I didn't know what to say, but, yeah, I made it. And then everybody started cheering, and... Dude, I honestly cannot. If you haven't been through it, you wouldn't understand how that feeling felt. And I don't.
Oh, I know.
You know, yeah.
Oh, I definitely know.
It's just so hard to explain. It's hard to, like, give you a word for the emotion. I don't know what it is. Just it was just unbelievable. I guess I was waiting for somebody to come and snatch me back. You know, like, it was a mistake. I was ready for somebody to, like, grab me in a chokehold and rip me back in the jail. You know, I just really wanted to get in the car. You know, I just wanted to get inside of a car and start driving somewhere. But it was the best moment of my life. Best moment of my life.
I just want to tell you that I'm so glad that, you know, when DeMarco asked, you know, what are you doing now? And you're like, oh, I'm doing the enthusiasm and the excitement. And you have a bright personality. I don't know if that's the right word for it or not, but
thank you.
It's sparkly. I can see that you're enjoying yourself. And I was worried when you first came on and you're like, you know, I have this appeal and it's hanging over my head. And then, you know, you said I was miserable all this time, but you're not letting it get you now. Like, you're living. And I'm so glad, because I have done a lot of interviews in my life and I have really enjoyed talking to you. And I think that lit up the Skype. I mean, you've lit up the call, and
thank you.
I think you're an inspiration. I think that you have stayed strong through such a amazing tragedy, and I don't know that I could do it. So good for you. I mean,
you'll be amazed, but you'll be amazed at what a human is capable of doing, you know, almost like the POWs, you know, you learn to adapt to your surroundings, you know, and you're either going to die or survive. You know, you have to get your mind right when you're put away like that, you know, and that's just what you do. You know, as soon as you get in there, your only purpose in life is to get out and figure out how to do it. And I just refuse to let, you know, anything get me down. Yeah, there were some bad moments, but I knew what the outcome was going to be as long as I just held on a little bit longer. I knew that outcome was right there, and I didn't want to give up before the miracle happened, and I stayed with it.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
It is amazing.
What can we do to help people who've been wrongly convicted?
Honestly, there's an innocence project in almost every state, I believe. And the one thing that you can do is donate, of course. If you can't donate, show up at the events that they have and show support. Tell somebody else about it. Go onto the Facebooks. Share it with everybody that you know. And always vote against the death penalty. You know? So those are the main things I can tell you that you can do to help with wrongful convictions. When you donate to an innocence project, you're helping the students be able to get that money to go out and to do more investigations on cases, to travel to the prisons and talk to the innocent people that are sitting in there. You know, these donations, they really do have a huge purpose and they're used for the right reasons. You know, without these students, it's put onto these lawyers who already have they're backlogged. So those are honestly like the main things I could say on what a person can do to try to help.
You are inspiration, but yeah.
I'm all hello.
No, I'm just soaking it in. DeMarco, did you have any more questions?
No, I'm inspired. You're doing a lot, and, you know, for you to be facing I was in this situation where you're at, you know, you stand focused, and you're doing what you feel you need to do so you can stay afloat. And I know it's hard, but I just wanted to tell you to continue to stay positive and doing positive things.
Thank you. I will. And I hope you text me.
So Kimberly lives in California. The weather that we had in San Diego, I wonder if she gets to have that all the time.
Oh, man, I didn't want to leave.
Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Okay.
I really wear my Bomba socks every day, too.
I do, too. I really own 20 pair. I'm not even exaggerating.
Oh, no. Bomba socks have great arch support. I love my Bomba socks.
I love Bombas. I really do.
No, I really do, too.
I'm wearing them right now.
I do. No joking.